Hey everybody, so we're going to get to your wrestling nostalgia, and tonight is a two-for-one special as we're looking at two different moments. The first, Jeff Hardy versus The Undertaker in 2002 on Monday Night Raw, where Jeff Hardy nearly beat The Undertaker. And then in the second half, we're going to look at the arrival of The Nexus back in 2011. 9 years ago, that group debuted. So we've got a lot to discuss, including a tribute to Road Warrior Animal, who passed away last night. Let's get everything going right after this. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand-in-hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out that's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast for this Wrestling Nostalgia Night. It's going to round out the week, at least in terms of my recording, but that would be in a non-pay-per-view week. Since this is a pay-per-view week, we have our preview and prediction show coming on Saturday for Clash of Champions, and a co-host will be joining me. And it's a special night tonight because I normally don't do this. What I mean by that is, normally I focus on a single topic, and I deep dive into that topic, but tonight I'm feeling generous, and per the request of listeners, this is directly from you guys, I am covering two topics tonight. The first, as you may know from the title and the open of the show, is Jeff Hardy versus The Undertaker, the ladder match for the Undisputed Championship that took place on Monday Night Raw, narrated by one of the greatest voices ever in the history of professional wrestling, of Jim Ross, who added an infinite amount to this moment. And also, the second piece of this will be the debut of The Nexus. I think it's a great topic that I received, particularly because it is relevant to the debut of Retribution. And there are some similarities off the top, and we're going to cover that. We're also going to cover the big differences and maybe what's working, what worked for Nexus and what didn't work for Retribution so far. Again, Retribution is a very, very new group, at least from a official debut stage. So we're going to get into that in the second half of the show. But first, a shout out to our newest patron, Laura, over at patreon.com/WWE podcast. Thank you so much for becoming a patron of the show. You now get the entire library ad-free. If you'd like to join her, head on over. So thank you so much, Laura. And if there's anything you need or you have suggestions, please feel free to reach out. Also, as far as YouTube goes, I should be posting a video tonight. I'm working on it. It is going to focus very heavily on Retribution. It may mirror a little bit of what you heard last night in my Raw review, which was a scathing review for Retribution. And I'm not tooting my own horn. It's honestly every word I meant, or every word I said I meant. I'm not backtracking on a damn thing. I'm not having any kind of buyer's remorse, so to speak, of feeling badly about what I've said about the storyline. And furthermore, I've had some negative feedback about the Rey Mysterio family, how they've acted, and from more than one person. And I, the more that I listen and talk to people, the more I'm actually starting to agree and get angry at their the whole Rey Mysterio family as well, in terms of just the acting and story from that perspective. But I think I'm just blinded by the fact that it's all over probably at Hell in a Cell. We hope. So keep that in mind. If you haven't subscribed to my YouTube channel, by the way, head on over. Very simple. YouTube.com/theWWEPodcast. It's very, very easy to do. And believe it or not, I am back on Twitter. However, a little bit of a caveat. It's not under the same name. I have come up with a new alias. And furthermore, I've also got a bit of a limitation on my account already. It says we've temporarily limited some of your account features, and I have another 4 hours. And it said, what happened? We've determined that you violated the Twitter rules. I don't know how I did. I just joined. I have one. I'm following one person. Twitter is just, they have it out for me. I think it's like a company mission, like some kind of mission statement. So I don't know how long my Twitter account's going to last, because it seems as like they are hot to trot on making sure that I never exist again on Twitter. But for however long it lasts, here's my Twitter handle. It is @wrestling_audio. Yeah, I know. I'm not putting the WWE podcast, but you'll see the logo in the name. So look for the logo. Again, it's @wrestling_audio. Pretty simple. So I want to keep it simple, and we'll see how long it lasts before I get blocked here, but I'm giving it a shot. But before we go any further, and we're going to get to some voicemails that we had come in, and you guys have been awesome about sending those voicemails, so we're going to get to those and then jump into the nostalgia. I can't go any further without mentioning the sad news about Animal passing, real life name, Joseph Laurinaitis, obviously one half of the Road Warriors. And was only 60 years old. I mean, jeez, 60. That's 25 years for me. And super young. I mean, 60 is, even though I'm 35, 60 is, that just seems so young. It's sad. From what I understand, he did die of natural causes. I know that when a wrestling legend passes to the untrained ear or the non-wrestling fan, and even sadly some wrestling fans automatically point to drugs, or they point to specifically steroids and the many years of abuse of steroids and a weakened heart, all that kind of thing. Who knows? They say natural causes. It would be like Eddie Guerrero being claimed as natural causes, and it was, but it was accelerated by many years of alcohol abuse. So who knows what kind of lifestyle he led? Maybe he did steroids in his early years. Maybe he didn't. It's likely he may have, but in it, his lifestyle, I think, had probably a hand in his, early passing. I mean, the actual event was natural causes, but, it's a sad thing nonetheless, super young. And, at least, he's now joining Hawk, right? It is a Road Warrior reunion right now, as Hawk, by the way, passed away in 2003. He died of a heart attack. And so, again, it's a sad moment. And they were inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2011. And if you don't know about the Road Warriors, man, do you need to educate yourself on what they did for the tag team division, how hot they were at their hottest. I mean, I came in towards the end of actually seeing them. I mean, I came in 97 watching wrestling, and I can remember just their outfits, how intense they were. Their finish was awesome. The Doomsday Device. I mean, how can you forget that? One of the most well-known finishes of all time, and honestly, kind of a dangerous finish when you look at what the what it actually entails. It's quite the dangerous finish, but it's a legendary tag team that will never be duplicated. And, many people looked at Ascension as kind of a knockoff, kind of a cheap branded version of the Road Warriors with their spiked attire. And I don't think that did them any favors, But the Road Warriors were in a class of their own. And when they were hot, they were as hot as tag team wrestling has ever been. And this is what Vince McMahon does not focus on, is tag team wrestling. And it can happen. I mean, you can have a Road Warrior-like team. It can happen. And it can happen in a way that doesn't always make one person the star and the other person gets left behind, which is what happens a lot of times in tag teams. And of course, who could forget Sonny? I mean, Sonny was, as a 14-year-old, I was 12 actually when I first saw it. And from 12 to 15 years old, I remember Sonny very well, very vividly. I'll leave it at that, as a young teenage boy. As many of us may remember, if you were that age or maybe even older, she was certainly the eye candy of the group. And it was a great tag team. I mean, even in the latter years when they weren't exactly in their prime, they were still memorable with their spiked football gear and their look and just their in-ring style. I mean, they embodied the fact that you don't need to do flip-flop and fly to have a, quote, five-star match. And that's exactly what they were. You didn't see them doing suicide dives. You didn't see them doing moonsaults. You know, you didn't see them doing this high-risk, low-reward move, a moveset. And they proved that you can get it done inside the ring with a great gimmick, larger-than-life charisma, and incredibly good chemistry, and obviously a great manager to boot. So, absolutely one of the best that will ever be is Road Warrior, Animal, and Hawk, the Road Warriors. And hats off to them. And I guess there's really only four words that you can say about this. And take a listen. Well put, well put. I think that's probably the way to end this. So rest in peace, Animal. Rest in peace. Okay, let's get into the voicemails, as I promised, and then we will jump into your nostalgia, which is what you're here for. So let's get to the voicemails. I'll answer them, and then we'll get moving on.
Hey there, Matt. It's Sean from New Jersey. Just wanted to leave a little couple things from Raw the other day. One of the things was that Retribution is like finally revealing themselves and they get a contract. I wasn't too pleased to see that because all they're doing is just causing mayhem, too much violence and stuff like that, and WWE's approving it. One of the things that WWE should do that AEW has, they should have no script. Like, because if you're in AEW, you have no script. You can do, like, pretty much whatever you want. And, like, have your own storyline. But with WWE, you have to do a script, which is pretty much annoying. And that's probably why most WWE superstars go to AEW to have, like, to do whatever. So let me know what you think about that. And also, I was thinking, like, maybe later in the future that they could have, like, Retribution and team from SmackDown and Raw, like in the Survivor Series. Or Hell in a Cell. That would be a pretty cool match to see, for sure. And as for Hell in a Cell, I think they're probably going to keep the belt on McIntyre versus Orton. And I would like to see the triple threat between Orton, McIntyre, and Keith Lee. I mean, I was see Keith Lee wearing the title just yet. He still has time. He's on a roll so far. And I hope he keeps on going, for sure. All right, I'm going to let you go now. So thanks again, and hope to hear from you soon.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for taking the time to call in. And I know that you attempted to last night, and the audio quality wasn't great. So thank you for calling back. To answer your questions, and I'll go through this pretty succinctly, the whole idea of no script. I think there is a healthy balance between no script and insanely micromanaged. And I think No, I know from every testimonial from WWE stars exiting the company have confirmed that it leans more towards the side of insane micromanagement. It may not be all the way there, but it's pretty damn close. So to go from that to telling Retribution no script, you're putting a lot of trust in those guys. And I'm of the belief of scripted promos generally suck. I mean, to be very blunt, generally they suck because you can read through what they're saying. They're rehearsing lines. It's too cute. Everything has to end on a pun or just end too perfectly. It's not how people speak. And everything just has to be quick-witted. Why? That's that. To me, that takes away from the reality, the connection that you make with a product to make it feel organic. As human beings, we have a sixth sense of when things are BS or fake, and that's what micromanaging does. At the same time, as I said, no script could be dangerous. Again, you're putting your trust in these people, and I think it's a pretty risky thing to do. As much as I hate scripted promos, as a company, I would be more comfortable with a word-for-word promo that I design versus just letting somebody, you know, shoot the you-know-what and deliver how they'd like. Now, does that mean that I would never let it be done? No. Like Stone Cold, I wouldn't give a script to. John Cena, I wouldn't give any kind of script to. Now, that said, when you say completely unscripted, I would also assume you mean that they at least know what direction they're going, meaning they're not going to just go into business for themselves and give themselves a title shot when that's not what they're building towards, but rather a destination they know is coming, and you tell the audience how we're going to get there. It's a dangerous thing to do. I mean, I wouldn't go no script, because that leaves a lot of open-ended things that could go wrong of something that somebody might say that then you have to fulfill, or something that they say that you can't fulfill, and it gives the audience potentially a match or stipulation or direction that you can't fulfill and disappoint your fans and viewers. I would do this instead, a kind of a happy medium. I would have the employees, I shouldn't say employees, they're technically not, the independent contractors, the wrestlers, get bullet points. Hit this in any way you want, and hit this. Because sometimes it's in the promo delivery is part of the story. Not necessarily just where you're going, but in the actual promo, a lot of it can dictate the story itself. So I would have bullet points. Make sure you hit this. Make sure you hit this, but use your own words. And here's where we're going. That's what I would do. And it would be sink or swim time. And with Retribution, I don't have enough trust in them to not give them at least 75 to 80% scripted promo. And maybe they are given more freedom. I don't know. But the leader, clearly, who is finally defined, has come forward, doesn't come across as somebody that is ad-libbing. He comes across as somebody that has read the script backstage and is coming out to deliver it in a way that tries to make him not sound like he's delivering a script, when in fact that's the exact effect you'll get when you try not to do that. So, I think there's a happy medium there, Sean. Second thing. You mentioned AEW, again, has none. It also would kind of go against the culture of WWE. AEW is notoriously for the performers, and they are left to their own devices to come up with a promo. Again, they are also, though, given a direction and bullet points to hit. You can't just have somebody blank slate completely. I mean, that would be chaos. So, also, moving on to your next point about Retribution in Survivor Series, that would be a hell of a... That's going to be a weird dynamic. How are they going to compete in Survivor Series? They're contracted by WWE now, which means if their whole goal is to destroy WWE, then how are they going to fight for a brand that they're on? Are they contractually obligated? Are they going to get fired? I mean, what? I don't know how that's going to work. So that's going to be fun in a couple months. It's going to be a mess is what it's going to be. Because suddenly everyone has brand loyalty. I mean, just because you are drafted by a certain brand means it's, you know, it is your second or your firstborn child. I mean, that's how much they seem to care about it. Just because. So we have a bunch of time to destroy the Survivor Series logic, and we will do that in a very joyous fashion in a couple of months. Also, you mentioned about Orton, Keith Lee, and McIntyre in a three-way. I think there is absolute potential for that, given the fact that Keith Lee has beaten Orton. He's got a case. Keith Lee has yet to lose a match. And Orton and McIntyre are automatically involved with one another right now, anyway, in the title program. However, I would be very cautious if I was WWE. If I were WWE. I don't know. I'm too tired. It's one of the words. Because if they're going to do that with Keith Lee and involve him in the match, and even if they don't have plans for Keith Lee to win the championship, fans are going to view that as, oh God, they're putting him down our throats. And yes, if you watched NXT, you would go, oh, this makes sense. But I would argue that a lot of viewers do not watch NXT, maybe knew the name, but are not familiar with his work. So they're brand new. He is brand new to them, to a lot of your viewers. So it's dangerous to put somebody in that position to tell them they're championship worthy off the bat. It's dangerous. Look no further than the Roman Reigns experiment, of which, yeah, now I know he's heel now. But for 6 years, he was not. And he skipped the Intercontinental Championship. He skipped a lot of stepping stones that he should have, including going heel early on. But that's all hindsight now. So I'd be very concerned. Personally, I would keep Keith Lee the hell out of any title picture right now that is a top title. I would have him in the United States Championship picture or in a very personal program with someone else. And you know, occasionally touching the main event because he's a good athlete. He's a unique promo. I know some people hate his delivery. Somebody on Twitter I was talking with said that, I mean, it's painful to watch him or listen to him speak. And that it feels kind of very robotic. And I would agree to the whole delivery issue. In terms of it feels now let me get this here. Or let me say this about Keith Lee. His delivery is unique. But is it so unique that it feels forced? Or is it coming off naturally of how he may speak? Because if he's trying to force that delivery to just be different in promo delivery, then I think it's a very bad choice. Because you'll never find your true voice. It'll always be that kind of pausing that he does that's slow and methodical. Like he has a unique, definitely a unique promo delivery. There's no question it does differentiate him, but once you get people's attention from differentiating yourself, can you hold their attention or do you drive them away? That's going to be the key with Keith. So, alrighty. Well, thanks so much, Sean. A lot to talk about there and looking forward to your next voicemail and talking with you soon, I'm sure, as well as everyone else listening. If you'd like to get yourself on the show, just as you heard, you can email us at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Or you can send a voicemail to the show, and that voicemail number, I always, you know, you think I'd know it off the bat by now. It's just one of those things. I can't, maybe it's because I'm a guy, I can't multitask, but here's the number, 518-952-0247. So call it, leave a voicemail. No one's answering. I promise. Many of you are probably like, that's kind of weird. Isn't that your personal cell? No, that's not my personal cell phone number. I can guarantee you that. It is not my personal cell number. So no one's answering. I get a notification on my phone that I got a voicemail from somebody, and I can see the transcript of the voicemail, but it is not tied to my direct line in any way. So those of you out there that are thinking it's going to be weird, I promise it's not. Try to keep your comments 1 to 2 minutes. 3 would be the absolute most if you've got a rant on your mind or you just have to get something out or whatever. But it'll cut you off, I think, at 3 minutes anyway. So it kind of, by default, cuts you off at a time that I would want to cut off anyway. But it is here for you to get your voice on the show. All right, let's take a break. And then jump into nostalgia. This is going to be a fun one. I've got some great audio that will bring back memories, or maybe you're hearing it for the first time and you're going to go, whoa, I need to see this. And the answer is yes. Yes, you do. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to jump in right after this.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Thank you so much for staying with me. And as a side note, some of you have asked me, oh my God, do I have to listen to political ads on your show? I will say this. A lot of the ads on my show, I don't have control over the specifics. So if you're hearing a political ad of which you do not agree of that political stance, I can promise you I am not the one putting these specific ads in. It kind of pulls from an ad bank, if you will. So whatever political stance you hear on the show, ad-wise, may or may not be my own political views. I mean, so just I know it's getting into election season, so look out. I mean, it's almost unavoidable at this point. I know that this should be an escape, but I mean, why wouldn't anyone monetize their show? I mean, it doesn't make no sense. But I promise you, I'm not trying to take you out of the moment. Okay, but okay, let's move on. Let's get to it. Jeff Hardy versus The Undertaker. Let's set the stage. Okay, Jeff Hardy was defined as a tag team wrestler at this time. Jeff Hardy was the TLC specialist with Matt Hardy. How many matches they had prior to this with Edge and Christian, AOP, I mean, just go down the list, these two, Edge and Christian, they really, really took tag team wrestling to another level. And you could argue they actually laid the foundation for today's style of wrestling, because the Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy tag team, along with many others, with D-Von, and like I said, D-Von Dudley, Bubba Ray, with Spike Dudley at times, and of course, Edge and Christian, they really redefined what tag team wrestling is, and they went from the kind of slow, methodical pace of a match to fast and furious and violent at times and high risk. They really redefined what tag team wrestling is. So in 2002, Jeff Hardy had been in a tag team for a few years at this point and was again defined as a tag team wrestler and got an opportunity to face The Undertaker on Raw for the Undisputed Championship. And if you remember, you may ask, what the hell is the Undisputed Championship? They combined the championships. They combined the World Heavyweight Championship and they combined the WWE Championship into the Undisputed Championship. So, the Undisputed WWE Championship was a symbolic move from brand split back to no brand split. And then back again. I mean, how many times are we going to see this rubber band bounce back and forth? But this match with The Undertaker took place, and it was a ladder match, and I remember really rooting for Jeff Hardy, because Jeff Hardy was still a young kid, and you really rooted for him. He showed guts. This was a career-defining moment for Jeff that I still think about to this day. That's how important this match was. And it was a Monday Night Raw. It wasn't a big pay-per-view. It didn't take place on a big stage in front of 80,000 people. This was your typical Monday Night Raw, and it was one that I don't think many of us will forget. If you haven't seen this match, it's not a five-star classic. Again, not every match that draws money or is memorable is five-star. There's a difference. As Chris Jericho put very eloquently on an interview he did, and I can't remember who, otherwise I'd give credit. Might have been Chris Van Vliet, but I'm not positive. He stated, you know, I'd rather have a match that makes money than a match that is rated five stars, because having a five-star match doesn't automatically make it a money-driving match or a memorable match, so to speak. It can, but a match that draws money has emotion, has feeling. The credentials of a five-star match many people use today as athleticism. Those are the qualifications for a five-star match, the kickouts, the reversals. It's very superficial, I think, today of what a five-star definition of a match is versus a match that truly draws money. There is a huge, huge difference oftentimes between the two. So I want to really separate these and separate my definitions to what a five-star match is and what this was not. And this was not today's traditional five-star match, nor would it be a five-star match in 2002 terms. But what it was a memorable, career-defining moment for Jeff Hardy. It showed he had guts. It showed he had heart. And in a way that was not stomach-churning that WWE likes to do today for their baby faces, it was raw. I guess no pun intended. It was uncut, unfiltered. It was just a gritty performance by Jeff Hardy. And the commentary by Jim Ross is something I'll never forget, and he can downplay his addition or his contribution to some of the talent's uprising, and he can downplay it because he seems like a relatively humble guy, and I genuinely believe that he is at this stage of the game in his career. But I really believe that some of the stars that were born in the Attitude Era that continued into the Ruthless Aggression Era, because remember, actually, technically, we're in the Ruthless Aggression Era now in 2002, just newly into it. I don't think they would have been as big had Jim Ross not been the voice of their uprising and the voice of the moments that defined them. And this is one of them for Jeff Hardy. Now, did Jeff Hardy go on after this to become a massive single star? No, he didn't. But what it was a moment that was the foundation for Jeff Hardy, proving that he's not just a tag team wrestler, that he can hang with the big boys, and that he's not just someone that relies on his partner to be in the corner to tag their hand to get a break, that he can go. And he was young at this time. I mean, probably in his late 20s, if I recall. I mean, this was, good Lord, 18 years ago. Absolutely insane it's 18 years. It was just absolutely one for the book, or books, I should say, and that's the phrase. So let's get to some audio. I mean, this gave me chills watching this before the show, and let's just get to it. The most famous call of the match by far. Again, this took place, as I am reading this now, because I didn't know up front, Manchester, New Hampshire, on July 1st, 2002, and here we go.
Undertaker said Jeff Hardy was not going to walk out of here, and he may be right, but again, he may be wrong. Oh, no, that ain't right. Wait a minute, my paycheck ain't right. Come on, give it to me. Jeff Hardy trying to fight out of this. He's jumped up the tier. Almost out of his own feet. And now he's climbing the ladder. Oh, Jeff Hardy is close. Get it. Get your title. You're the Undertaker. Oh, look out. Come on, kid. You can still do it. One more step. Oh, one more step. He's got to be in there. Jeff Hardy, oh, my God. Oh, God, no. No. A two-fold on the top of the ladder. And the Undertaker with This match took a tremendous amount out of The Undertaker, and poor Jeff Hardy gave us everything he had.
Yeah, but Undertaker kept his word. He gave us his word that Jeff Hardy would not walk out of this arena. Look at it. He's down.
It's not quite over here, but I mean, the match is over, but there was more to come in terms of building Jeff Hardy on the backside of this loss. But boy, I mean, just listening to that, I mean, it's been 18 years and that call from Jim Ross still gives me chills, because Jim Ross has a way of just giving authentic reaction, authentic feeling into a match. Nothing from him feels produced. And even in AEW, I mean, yeah, he's lost a step, but it's been 20 years. I mean, how can you expect that Jim Ross of 20 years ago? You got to expect the Jim Ross of 2020. But this was just a great match, from psychology to execution to the follow-up of what happened after the match. This was great. I mean, you heard it. Come on, kid, make yourself famous. I mean, it's a line that will forever be in the annals of Jeff Hardy's career. And it was a great match, just from all angles. I mean, it was easily the match of that night, and probably of Jeff Hardy's career, one of the biggest matches that he ever had. But there was some follow up to this, so let's listen to that.
Hardy will not die. He will not stay down.
Don't speak too soon.
Lay down. Leave him alone. Lay down. Boy. Enough is enough.
We should have just laid down. There's no reason for this.
So, Undertaker heel here. I mean, you got to remember, Undertaker as Big Evil was still heel. He's two years away from transitioning back to the dead man. But Undertaker's not done, and Jeff Hardy's not done. And this is, honestly, this is how you build somebody in a loss. And here we go. This is great.
They broke me. I'm still standing.
Oh, no, you're not. Cut the mic off.
So from the ropes I'm standing.
Cut the damn mic off. That's enough. Look, kid. Jeff, don't do it.
Right, that's enough,
Jeff.
Jeff,
that's enough.
Throw the mic.
You got nothing to prove, kid.
Give us that microphone.
You got nothing to prove. And Jeff Hardy's a business here. There's no reason for this. You can't even bend this here.
So this whole segment at the end here was Jeff Hardy running his mouth saying, "You didn't break me." And Undertaker gets off his bike and comes down the ramp and was about to strike Jeff Hardy, and instead raises his hand and points to him. And I think he lips something like along the lines of, "You're one tough SOB. That's what it's all about." Something like that. And that's coming from a heel taker. Heel taker doing this to a babyface Jeff Hardy. Quite the turn of events, and it was about a respect moment. The fans respect Undertaker immeasurably, and to have Undertaker respect Jeff Hardy was kind of like, okay, the guy that we really respect respects the guy that we kind of respect. So that automatically increases the respect of Jeff Hardy, the guy that we respect, but not as much as Taker. It was a moment of respect. It was a moment of propulsion for his career. I mean, again, he didn't go on to be the next Stone Cold, but it put Jeff Hardy on the map, and not just as a tag team wrestler. So great, great moment, and encourage everyone to go watch the actual match. It's on YouTube. You don't have to go to the network. You just search Jeff Hardy versus Undertaker. WWE has the full length match. on YouTube. It's about 18 minutes long, and I'd encourage everyone to see it. It'll brighten your day if you're a wrestling fan, I promise. Alrighty, well, let's get to part two. I normally don't have part two, but tonight we have part two, and that is Nexus. And they debuted on June 7th, 2010, in the main event of John Cena versus CM Punk. And this was one of the most impactful moments in WWE, because WWE had felt a little stagnant at this point. John Cena was the guy. He's the big dog, right? I mean, no pun intended, but he was. And everything just circled around and centered around John Cena. And this shook things up in a big way. This took me by surprise. I actually remember watching this live 10 years ago and thinking, is this really supposed to happen? And to even have that thought in wrestling land right now is a very rare thought, because everything you see is a work. Almost everything you see. And when you get to see real moments, it's a extremely rare situation. And this actually had me for a few minutes maybe going, wait, what? I mean, it was just so cool to see. Have them coming in and tearing things up. And it was a very, very interesting and probably the most unique debut for a group up to this point. So let's get into some of the audio here with John Cena versus CM Punk. And for the first time, John Cena sees Wade Barrett walking down the aisle. So John Cena gets beat down. We got CM Punk being beat down. And remember some of these names, right? Skip Sheffield, which eventually became Ryback. We have Heath Slater, who hung on for quite some time and made a tag team with Rhino. We had Michael Tarver, who kind of like came and went. And I actually interviewed Michael Tarver many years ago probably a few years ago on the show. Nice guy, is actually, I believe, doing rap music now. He's creating music and has some albums out. We had, who else was it? Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, who actually got fired after this incident because he used a necktie to choke out Justin Roberts. Yeah, he got fired for that. I mean, geez, imagine WWE missing out on the Daniel Bryan story and all the money they made with that and the story that created leading up to WrestleMania 30. Wade Barrett, probably one of the most underrated heels in WWE history. And yeah, he became Bad News Barrett. He actually even had the Core. You guys remember the Core on SmackDown, which was just a poor man's version of Nexus. And this was a very interesting group. And yeah, we even had Michael McGillicuddy, right? We had Bray Wyatt, who was Husky Harris. I mean, this group was very unique in that you never would have guessed the stars that would have come out of this group. If you had said Daniel Bryan was going to be the star coming out of this group, I mean, you would have been laughed at the first night. But this was a defining moment here, and they go on to destroy the ring. They tore up stuff. They tore up the ring. They tore up everything on ringside. And yeah, that's what Retribution did. So the similarities of Retribution and the debut of Nexus, they both destroyed stuff. But where Retribution was different was the extreme that they went. You know, I didn't see Nexus bringing in a chainsaw to cut the ring ropes. I didn't see Nexus attacking fans. I mean, you can't do that, of course. But they did attack the ring announcer, and they attacked non-performer, non-wrestlers. So there is that. So the destruction there ends there, but the attire, much different. And the intent, much different. The intent of Nexus was not to destroy WWE itself. Retribution is a much darker group, a much darker mission. And they weren't covering themselves with masks and hiding their identity. But this group, for all of its storyline faults, meaning I think it was not played out well in terms of having John Cena go over and beat all of them, did introduce some stars to the company that may not have otherwise gotten a chance in a singles capacity being brought up, instead being brought up as part of a group. The stars that came out of this are pretty damn good. Like I said, Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt, Ryback to some degree. You know, so this is a pretty darn good group of people that were brought up, and a great idea. I mean, I would love to go back and watch the rate, look at the ratings for this time frame and see how much this affected. And I'm sure it got social media blowing up. It was just a unique thing to do, something I've never seen in wrestling up to that point. And I think 10 years later, they do a very similar angle, except more extreme and actually rooted in real life scenarios going on in the world right now. So a much more sensitive topic. Back then in 2010, you didn't have that. I mean, so it was a much safer way to go. But having John Cena beat all of them, not my favorite thing. And not my favorite thing at all. But this was a great debut. It got people talking. It introduced a ton of new faces into WWE that you may not have seen otherwise. Again, these were from season one of NXT, these people. Season one, where they were doing keg races and doing silly, like, double dare type of stunts. I mean, I expected Mark Summers to come out at one point and narrate some of these stunts that they were having these guys do. I mean, it was embarrassing at times just how much of a joke NXT was. And to see what it is today, it's just absolutely shocking and just really impressive to see where they've come from 10 years ago. But impactful, and definitely recommend that you watch it and rewatch it and go, yeah, and kind of pull things from what you see from Retribution and what the Nexus did. There are some similarities, but definitely differences in terms of mission, in terms of attire, and overall feel. But certainly very similar in terms of their debut coming in and just destroying everything. I mean, that's just what they did. And at least they had the one thing also with the difference. Retribution has an ill-defined amount of people. Nexus had a defined number of people. You knew their identities. It was X amount of people, right? So it was a very that's where they also differed. But alrighty, well, guys, this has been fun. This has been fun. Just kind of going back in the past and looking at these two moments. If you have more suggestions, please reach out to me. You can either go on Instagram at WWE_podcast. On Twitter, let's see how long I can say that. We'll see if Twitter catches up with me, at wrestling_audio. Follow me there as well. And you can also email the show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com or voicemail for us. You guys know the number for that. Many ways to get in touch with us. I want to make sure you guys have your voices heard. And that's what these two topics were tonight. These were not from my own brain. These were from you guys. These were from you guys. And that's what this show is also about, is making sure that I give you guys what you want. And so, all right. Well, I think that does it for me tonight. Again, I'll be back Saturday. Normally, I do a Sunday night show this week with the pay-per-view on Sunday. Saturday night, I'll be doing a show previewing the Clash of Champions pay-per-view with Zach Smith. You guys know him as your NXT podcast review host. And again, his show will be dropping tomorrow as well. So you get a double dose of Zach tomorrow and Saturday as we join forces. It feels like it's been months. And we will give our preview and prediction on Saturday night. Sunday, Clash of Champions. Hopefully I will still have my Twitter account. Again, fingers crossed for being able to interact with you guys live. I will also be back on Monday for your listening pleasure, for your review of the pay-per-view with the Botch Guy, as we will be collaborating for this pay-per-view, doing a review, and then I'll be appearing on his show. So head on over to the YouTube channel of the Botch Guy and subscribe there as we get closer to the pay-per-view. Great channel, by the way. I always say that, but it's true. Funny, entertaining, and just authentic. So, alrighty. Well, I think that's it for me, guys. You'll be hearing a lot more from me this week and our co-hosts, of course. Until then, I'll talk to you soon. Are you in a position where you need to sell your home? Perhaps you're facing financial difficulties, or you're facing a foreclosure, a divorce, or maybe you're just relocating because of retirement. Maybe there are some other debt issues and you just need to sell your home. Well, here is a great solution for you. And that solution is Bright Realty Investment. They are a leading real estate solutions company, and their mission is to work hand in hand with all parties to handle every situation with the utmost professionalism and care. So if you're in a particularly stressful financial situation right now and you need to protect your credit, then don't waste another minute. Head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com. That's brightrealtyinvestment.com. And when you go to the website, there's a really easy form you fill out. It's right at the top, and they'll get back to you immediately. So why wait? Don't let that divorce, that retirement, or other bad debt situation take control of your life. Take control back and head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com, where they can buy your house, protect your credit, and get your life back on track. Again, head on over to brightrealtyinvestment.com.